B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Guitarist, singer, songwriter Damon Johnson joins me today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. He has a new solo album out called Memoirs of an Uprising. We talk a lot about that record, the giant leap it took to put out that record and leave Black Star Riders, as well as some of the other projects he's worked on in the past, like the Damn Yankees, and a record they recorded which will probably never see the light of day.
There's a record that we recorded that you'll never see it. You'll never hear it. Not unless Jack and Ted and Tommy decide they want to put it out.
We talk about his time playing with the legendary John Waite, as well as a gigantic band he actually auditioned for. How about a close call on stage with Alice Cooper? Oh, and would he ever rejoin the guys from Brother Kane and jam with them again?
You know, I would always embrace an opportunity to play with those guys. It's just so tough to get everybody's schedules to line up.
He tells me a story about almost meeting one of his heroes in Les Paul, as well as favorite Eddie Van Halen stories.
Yeah, I got a couple.
You'll have to listen to see how that one turns out. Damon Johnson today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Great conversation today with Damon Johnson. Thanks so much for downloading and checking out this interview. That story about auditioning for another band, I mean, just a gigantic band, is a really cool story. The one with Alice Cooper is an awesome story that Damon tells. Just a great interview and a great guy. Listen to his laugh in this interview, and you can just tell what a real, true, down-to-earth guy Damon Johnson is. I really like him a lot. This is a new record, Memoirs of an Uprising, killer solo stuff from Damon, so if you get a chance, go out and snag that. And Al Beck comes up after Damon with news on AC/DC. What's going on with that? A legendary band putting out a video series about their history, as well as a band coming out with a graphic novel. And Tom Morello, a couple different stories about Tom from Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave and the whole thing. So we'll get to that with Al Beck coming up after Damon Johnson. But first, Damon's record came out back in March, and I've been kind of playing phone tag back and forth with him, and he's been doing different shows. Played one show in NASA like about 3 weeks ago, which is really cool, down in the Caribbean. And so finally we got our schedules to match up, and it was perfect timing. I didn't have a whole lot going on this week, and Damon had some extra time, so we just hooked up. And here's the conversation today with Damon Johnson, guitarist, singer, songwriter, and swell guy.
Brother, things are good. I feel, I'm still kind of basking in the afterglow of releasing my new album, Memoirs of an Uprising. It's just been a great time, man. You know, I've been able to reconnect with a lot of fans that, you know, really kind of followed me for the better part of 25 years, going back to the Brother Kane days. But then also touching base with new fans that I've built in my time with Black Star Riders, touring with Alice Cooper. You know, it's kind of like this new record represents a combination of all of that support. So it's been awesome, Meltdown. And we're having a great time. We've got a lot of shows coming up in May. We've been playing a little bit, you know, the first quarter of the year, but things are about to get really busy.
Yeah, I see that you got a bunch of shows coming up here, and I saw one of them right off the top of the bat was the shows with Thin Lizzy. Tell me about that.
Yeah, man, there's four festival dates that we're going to do in Europe, the end of July, first part of August, and you know, it's always fun to get a call from Scott Gorham to say, hey, bud, I think we should get the band together and celebrate the Black Rose album. It's been 40 years since that record was released. And for me, brother, Black Rose was a seminal record in my development and my, you know, guitar playing and songwriting. I mean, that was definitely one of those important records in my growth when I first started really taking that path of wanting to be an artist myself, you know what I mean? So it's just an honor, man, to be a part of Thin Lizzy Steel. And kind of like you and I talked about the last time we spoke, Meltdown, you know, Thin Lizzy tours just enough that it's perfect for me to continue to do that, but still focus on my solo work and make that my priority.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the new record and stuff, I mean, you know, I'm sure you've been asked this question a billion times, but let me just throw it out there anyways. You took a giant leap leaving Black Star Writers to do your own thing. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, it was definitely a big leap because I love those guys so much. You know, it's definitely a brotherhood. We spent 6 years together, three quality records we made.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, man, you see, especially for me being such an integral part of the songwriting with Ricky, I just love that, man. That's what I've always loved to do everybody loves to get on stage and rock out, but I love the songwriting. I love working in the studio. So, tough decision, man. You know, it's not like there was any big drama or anything like that.
Right.
I've said it a couple times before. I was really kind of looking down the road a bit, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And, you know, I just didn't see that band growing a fan base beyond the United Kingdom and Scandinavia and parts of Europe. That's where we had been spending all of our time. And, you know, that's awesome for Scott because he lives over there. Ricky's from there. Ricky's from Belfast. And, you know, I know he has goals of kind of settling back over there one day, you know, with his family. And, you know, I wanted to do more work in North America. And I was ready to get back behind the microphone for sure, Meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always been writing and just kind of compiling stuff, and I put out a few solo things for fun, almost treated them like side projects, you know. But I was super stoked about this last batch of songs I had put together. The record was sounding great, so it was a combination of all those things. And I saw you in Detroit when we played up there with Judas Priest a year ago.
Yeah,
now that was kind of when my mind started looking in this direction. So, you know, it was not an easy decision, but it was definitely the right decision for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, was it a year ago? It was a year ago. Yeah, in March. Yeah, man. And I remember that was, you know, people may find this funny to hear, but Chris Fain, who's now out of Slipknot, he was a huge fan of Brother Kane back in the day and told me the funniest story about picking you up to go golfing or something like that. And he couldn't believe that he was riding around in the car with you. Remember that?
Well, that was the best. That was the best because the way it came to, see, I was playing with Alice Cooper at that time, and, you know, we got a call from, or like an email from the tour manager said, hey guys, when we get to, we were somewhere, I want us, doesn't Chris live like in Idaho or Minnesota?
Well, no, I think it was, I think it was in Iowa where they're from, but he actually lives here in Detroit, but yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, wherever it was that we golfed.
Yeah.
Somebody said, hey, one of the guys from Slipknot wants to golf with you guys. And, you know, do you want to do that? And Coop and I were instantly like, of course, that'd be great. So we roll up. There's Chris, you know, and we get up like on the first tee box. And Chris goes, Damon, you don't remember who I am, do you? And I says, bro, I've been staring at you this whole morning going, where else do I know him from? And sure enough, man, he had come to several Brother Kane shows as a fan, like a diehard fan.
Right.
So such a wild reconnection, you know, for me. And you know, Chris is such a good guy. And I know whatever he's going to do in the future, he's going to be fine, man. He's just a good cat, man. I really like Chris a lot.
And he's a pretty decent golfer.
Oh, my God, dude. I know he thumped me pretty hard. He put it on me pretty hard. He was able to go toe-to-toe with Alice, no problem. I'm sure their scores were pretty close. Chris is definitely a good golfer.
Hey, speaking of Alice, you know, I had Dennis Dunaway on the show last week and stuff, and that movie, Live from the AstroTurf, is out now, and it's kind of playing around the country in different areas or something. But are you familiar with that whole thing?
No, tell me about that.
Well, this guy who owns a record store down in Texas is a huge Alice Cooper fan, and I guess Dennis Dunaway was doing a book signing for his book he had out 3 years ago, and they kind of scheduled it to a date where they knew Alice was going to be off, and he was coming to play Dallas the next night, and he thought that, you know, if he was golfing that day, he could show up at the store. And so they got the other two original members that are still around, and Alice did show up, and so they filmed the whole thing and kind of made it a documentary. And he played, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 songs. Ryan Roxy played and stuff with him too.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's great. No, I'll have to check that out, man. Well, I texted with you about Dennis. Dennis Dunaway is such a tremendous influence to a lot of bass player guys that I'm friends with, specifically Rachel Bolan from Skid Row, Duff McKagan. Duff loved those Alice Cooper records, man. So that's, you know, and I hope Dennis knows that. I'm sure he does. He's so unassuming and so humble, but we love Dennis Dunaway for sure.
Yeah, what a great guy. You know, I was looking through some of your past, and I know that you played, you know, with Black Star and Alice Cooper and Brother King and all this stuff, but I didn't realize that. Is it true that you kind of had a stint in Damn Yankees?
Yeah, man, it was short-lived. It was short and sweet, but it definitely happens. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. This came right on the heels of Brother King calling it a day, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. And I got a phone call from their A&R guy, the legendary John Kalodner. And John had kept up with my work over the years and had always kept a interested eye on Brother Kane and what we were doing. So John had heard a new batch of songs I had written, and he passed it on to the guys. And I knew most of the guys in the band already. You know, I knew Michael Cardelloni. I knew Ted because Brother Kane had done shows with Ted before. And, yeah, we worked for a little while, man, and tried to get that off the ground. And, you know, it was kind of the front end of all of those guys doing their other things at the same time. And, you know, it's the challenge for any of us, Meltdown, that are involved in different bands. It's like if you're going to be in a band, you have to commit to that one thing full time if you're going to try and get it off the ground. That's why I love being in Black Star Riders, because everybody said, hey, this is what we're going to focus on. No side projects. Yeah, I mean, it's not that you couldn't, but nobody wanted to. Everybody wanted to channel all their energy into that one thing.
Right.
So that moment in Damn Yankees history, I think, suffered from that. You know, because Ted had tour dates in the summer. Night Ranger was going back out. Tommy Shaw had just acquired the rights to the name Styx because they had departed. They'd split up with Dennis DeYoung. So, you know, that was right at the start of him launching that thing.
So and, so is there a record out there that did you guys record it, which will never see the light of day?
Correct. There's a record that we recorded that you'll never see it. You'll never hear it. You know, not unless Jack and Ted and Tommy decide they want to put it out. But, you know, I think that record suffered from it needed some more material. And again, man, there just wasn't quite the unified effort, I think, on everybody's part. The mixes, the final mixes that we got, we were all kind of underwhelmed, to tell you the truth. And, you know, there just wasn't the time for everybody to get back in the room and go, well, let's write some more songs. Let's record some more songs. It all comes back to time, Meltdown. Everybody's time is so valuable.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, it's those things that we all take it for granted, especially when we're younger. I mean, when I was in Brother Kane, man, you never thought about time. We just lived it. We were always on the road, always playing shows, always writing songs. And but, man, when you grow up, a lot of things change.
Well, there's no doubt, and you have a teenage son like I do, and it kind of dawned on me not that long ago that he has no concept of time, and he thinks, you know, if I take something away from him, that's like the end of the world because he'll never get it back or what. You know what I'm saying? Do you see that in your kid?
Oh, totally, man. Totally. And I think that's just kind of a rite of passage for all of us when we're that young and in those years. And for me, man, it's just a huge part of my decision making on a weekly basis. And, you know, my wife is always hammering me about that, Damon. Your time is so valuable. And I think it's good that our kids kind of hear that by proxy. You know, they can hear it from the other room. There's mom and dad talking about time again. But it's true. It's true. And it's certainly true in rock and roll, you know, and it kind of comes full circle back to what we started this discussion about. You know, for me to have now, I feel like it's a luxury to have all the time I want to focus on my own music. I've never had that, man. I haven't really had that since the Brother Kane days. But, you know, even that was a four-headed beast. You know, you got four guys making decisions about big things, little things, insignificant things. And, I'm totally fine with calling the shots myself now. So it's good.
I never thought about that, but that's interesting that you say, because since Brother Kane, you've been, you know, with Alice and with, you know, the Black Star Riders guys, and like we were just talking about Damn Yankees, John Waite, the whole thing, and you weren't really doing your stuff, you know, even though you contributed a little bit, but some of the songs, you know, obviously were written well before you were in the bands and different things like that. And so now this is your chance to just let it all out of yourself.
Doing my own songs, man, you know, and it's fun to look back and play some of the old songs, but I'm much more focused on the future, you know, where I'm headed. It's such a great feeling to have a brand new record with songs that I love listening to my new record, Meltdown. That in itself says a lot, because usually you spend so much time writing and recording a record and then going over the final mixes. You get kind of burned out on it. It's just a natural thing. But that hasn't happened with me yet, you know, and I just feel like this was, you know, the outcome of this record. It was the perfect launch pad for me to do this thing. So, like you said, you know, it all requires a lot of effort and a lot of time. And, you know, I run into a lot of my friends here in Nashville that live here. I saw Tom Kiefer the other day and we spoke briefly, and, you know, Tom gets it. You know, he was in a big band for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, now he's doing his own thing, and it's hard to quantify the fulfillment of being able to get something like that off the ground. And you know, man, my band is out on the road with me, Meltdown, are just top shelf, 5-star talented players, man. I'm humbled to have guys that play that well, that want to play my music, you know, and go on the road with me, you know, so I take that responsibility pretty serious. You know, I want to keep those guys together. It's a great band. So,
now you mentioned Tom Kiefer. Is Tony Higbee playing with you out on the road or what?
Tony is playing with me, man. Tony was the last addition to the band, and such a great fit with what we're doing, because he's a triple threat himself, man. Great guitar player, great singer. And he makes a good rock star. So the two of us on stage, man, we're like frickin' frack. We Paul dudes with Les Pauls. It's a strong band. But yeah, Tony's on guitar. Jared Pope, my longtime friend, on drums. And then Tony Nagy is my bass player.
Okay.
It's, you know, we just can't wait to get to Detroit. We got it as we speak, man.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, I'll talk to you about that here in a few minutes. But yeah, that's cool. You're speaking of time. So, by the way, a bill with you and Tom Kiefer would be awesome. That would be like that'd be a perfect fit, I think.
Yeah, I do too, man. That's definitely a goal. You know, I've always had a lot of respect for Tom's songwriting and his guitar playing, and you know, I'm just so happy to see him healthy and singing and kicking ass, man. They just are wrapping up a brand new record, and which works out good for me, because Higbee and Jared both play in Tom's band. So while those guys are kind of on the down low, then I'm, you know, it's fun for me, because I can go out and book some shows and have the guys, because I know the day is coming, man, where there's going to be a schedule conflict, and Tom's going to win that one, because he pays those guys way better than I do.
I bet.
but these are good problems to have, especially when you live here in Nashville, man. You know, we're just surrounded with monster players and great songwriters and great studios. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Now, you talked about time and stuff. I think next year it's going to be like 20 years since you were in Brother Kane, isn't it?
That's right, man. We called it a day in early 2000, and you know, we had such a great run. And
holy crap, because that was right after I saw you when you came here for the Turn of the Century concert with Metallica.
That's right.
You know, I ran into you in the hallway, in the stairway.
Yeah, that was at the Silverdome, right?
Yep.
Yeah, man.
So it was shortly after that, then, yeah.
Yeah, we had already started to kind of wind it down, and I just remember being at that show that night and having a great time. And I actually talked to Ted that night, and, you know, he's like, what are you doing next? I said, I don't know. It was all still really fresh. And, but, you know, my wife Linda and I, who was my girlfriend at the time, we had just started our relationship. So, you know, there was good new energy in my life. I just wasn't sure what was going to happen musically. So it's wild when you say, yeah, man, 20 years ago.
20 years. Maybe you guys should do a reunion, a 20-year reunion tour.
You know, man, I love keeping in touch with all those guys. Everybody's healthy and you know, got kids and busy doing 10 different things, just like I am. And, you know, I would always embrace an opportunity to play with those guys. It's just so tough to get everybody's schedules to line up.
I got you. And Roman keeps, you know, cutting fingers off and different things. You saw that, right?
Oh my God, yes. I saw that, you know, like everybody else, I saw that picture on Instagram. Oh. I think I dropped my phone. I think I literally, like, threw the phone out of my ear, like, ouch, ouch, ouch. It's just terrible, man.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I click on his page, and it says, you know, this material may be unsuitable. I'm like, well, what could possibly be unsuitable? And I click on it. I'm like, oh, God, I wish I wouldn't have clicked on it.
No, that image is burned in my mind. I'm just glad he's doing okay, man.
Yeah, no doubt.
And it looks like he found a way to keep rocking that bass guitar. So
that's right.
You know, he's played with his fingers, man, his whole career. So I know that was an adjustment for him to put a pick in his hand. But
yeah, Roman's a good people, man.
He really is, man. He's a monster talent. Yeah. Great bass player.
Hey, a couple of things I'm going to throw at you here real fast as we plug the new record, of course, Memoirs, some Uprising and stuff. That's how we're now on the tour coming up. But so I'm just going to throw some things out at you. What were other bands you tried out for and maybe didn't make it?
You know what? I can't. there's one thing I did. I did do a jam. A pretty big one. I jammed with the guys in Bon Jovi.
Really?
they were not sure what they were going to do after Sambora had left. And John and I have a great mutual friend, and he happened to be in Nashville, and we got together and we talked about it, and he had been looking up some stuff of me on YouTube. He remembered Brother Kane a little bit, but you know, at the time, man, if you went and just put in Damon Johnson on YouTube, all you really saw was a lot of acoustic stuff.
Uh-huh.
But he loved all of that. And then, you know, when he found out that I had done this other stuff with Alice and then Lizzie, he's like, well, yeah, man. Well, if you want, let's do a jam. You know, we're not sure exactly what we're going to do. So sure enough, that's what happened. And I flew to New York and played five of the most famous Bon Jovi songs you can think of and had a great time. And it was awesome. Other than that, I don't know, man. You know, I never really thought about being a sideman until that John Waite opportunity fell into my lap.
And that was shortly after Brother Kane had dissipated, right?
That's right. Shortly after I saw you at that Turn of the Century concert, is when I got the call about that.
Yeah, what was it like playing with John Waite? I love that dude.
John is one of the five greatest rock singers of our time, and I will put my boots on anybody's coffee table and debate that to the end. That, you know, I mean, when you're like, who else you want to name? Paul Rogers, yes. Roger Daltrey, yes. Chris Cornell, yes. John Waite is absolutely in that discussion, man. Such a great, bluesy, talented singer. And I think I just wasn't prepared for how great of a singer he was. I mean, I'd loved those songs my whole life, you know, going back to the Babies and certainly his solo stuff as well. But, man, he sang the songs differently every night. He was a lot like Paul Rogers in that way. He would just get inside the song and, like, riff vocally. He would just, you know, however he was feeling is how he would deliver the song. So that was an incredible experience for me.
That's interesting. Here's another fast one for you here. Any close calls on stage playing with Alice? as far as like the props and different things like that?
Yeah, man. The biggest one was the very first night. You know, I got the gig and I had about a week of rehearsals with the band minus Coop. He wasn't there. But we were running all the songs and they were saying, you know, they made notes on the set list like, hey, man, right here, make sure you're not on stage right because they're going to roll the guillotine out here. And then here's another song where Alice is going to have on the straitjacket. And then at the end of Billion Dollar Babies, watch out because he'll have the sword and he's throwing the dollar bills, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we played the first show in New Jersey, my first ever show. And I play the guitar lick at the start of a classic original band song called Is It My Body?
Mm.
So, you know, man, I step up, I start playing the riff. There's like five spotlights on me and I'm like, man, this is awesome. Awesome. I'm playing Is It My Body with Alice Cooper. And Alice steps up out of the shadows and he puts his elbow up on my shoulder and he starts singing the lyric. But what no one ever said one word about was that damn boa constrictor. He had that snake meltdown. It was wrapped around his neck. Dude, I don't like snakes, okay? I'm not a snake guy.
Uh-huh.
So I'm in the middle of the stage. I'm the only instrument making noise. Alice's elbow on my shoulder, and there's that snake, man, with his head up, leering, looking at me, looking at Coop. And, bro, I am about to hyperventilate. You know, what do you do?
Right. You can't leave, right.
You can't just run off. So, you know, finally when the band starts to kick in, you know, Coop pulled off my shoulder and starts walking to the other side of the stage. And I ran over to my guitar tech and I used some expletives that would not play well on this interview. But I was like, are you kidding me? No one mentioned the snake, not once, ever.
So did he do this on every show?
Oh, every show, man. The snake.
But at least you knew it was coming.
Well, yeah, I knew it was coming. And then, you know, and it was no problem. And, you know, maybe you're the same. I'm fascinated with snakes. If I know I can, it's coming. Like, hey, man, we're going to go to the reptile exhibit at the zoo. Okay, cool. Let's go check it
right,
out.
Right, right, right.
But to just have, bro, that was horrifying. I was, it took me a while to get over that one.
So where's the strangest place you've ever been recognized?
The strangest place I've ever been recognized. I don't know, man. Maybe Home Depot.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird. You know, you're in there buying light bulbs, a garden hose, and, you know, maybe I needed a drill bit for something I was working on at the house, and I'm standing there in line waiting to do the self-checkout. And this guy literally goes, hey, man. Weren't you in Brother Kane?
What do you say? I was.
Yeah, I did.
That's funny. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I was probably in shorts and a ball cap and, you know, some kind of construction boots, you know, so I'm surprised he could recognize me.
What about a riff that you wish you would have written?
Oh, brother, there's thousands. There's thousands. You know, there's just so many, bro. I was on the treadmill yesterday listening to If You Want Blood, You Got It by AC/DC. I love the band Clutch. Those guys have so many great riffs, man. That riff in Earth Rocker, Electric Worry, those are great riffs. You know, I agree with something that... I think maybe it was Nuno Betancourt that said at one time, he goes, you know, we're all just angry at Jimmy Page because Jimmy wrote all the great riffs. There's none left after that. He took them all, you know.
Yeah, it's like Ozzy did all the drugs. Yeah, right.
Ozzy did all the drugs. Jimmy wrote all the riffs. You know, Eddie Van Halen, he wrote a couple riffs, man. Let's not miss that, you know.
Now, you've met Eddie a bunch of times, right?
Yeah, we did dates with Eddie and the band in 96.
Yeah, you got any favorite Eddie stories?
Yeah, I got a couple. I'll tell you the shortest one in the interest of brevity.
Okay.
But, the first day we did with them was in Dayton, Ohio, and the tour manager for Van Halen, the legendary Scotty Ross, super great guy. He had, you know, we were talking, and he came down to catering and introduced himself to the band, and everybody was like, "Yeah, Damon's a big fan." You know, this is, and I was like nodding my head, like, "Oh yeah, man, this is a dream come true." You know, love Van Halen. He goes, "Well, hey man, if you want to go say hello to Eddie, just go down to the dressing room and say hi. He's down there right now." And before he got the sentence out of his mouth, dude, I jumped up, dropped my coat out the door, running from catering, you know, down to the dressing room. I'm going to find Eddie Van Halen. So I go by their dressing room, and I'm a little nervous, you know. So I stick my head in. There's nobody there. I go to dressing room two. Stick my head in. Nobody there. I went into a third room. Nobody there. So I'm like, well, okay, maybe later. So I go back to our dressing room, and I walk in, and I see across the room the back of Eddie Van Halen as he's leaning over into our soda, you know, into the ice box that's got all our, you know, Gatorade and water, and he's like peering around in there. So the first words I ever said to him were, "Hey man, why don't you go down to your own dressing room and get something to drink?" And he turned around and started laughing, you know, and it was like instantly great friends. Like, he came over and hugged me. And he goes, "You must be Damon." And I said, "Yeah, man." And I said, "I'm freaking out right now." You know? And we just sat down on the couch and started talking about wives and kids. And, you know, he was in a great space on that tour, man. So that was really special for me.
Now, have you ever had a chance to, did you ever get a chance, I should say, to meet Les Paul?
No, I never did. I came really close. There was a, you know, they have the NAMM show every year. The winter NAMM show is in Anaheim every year. And I went out there, I think around 95 or 96, Gibson Guitars was doing a thing that we were participating in. And I was going to meet Les at that event, and really excited about it. I remember my dad was excited because we used to talk about Les Paul a lot. But Les was not able to make the trip. And when I got to the show, the Gibson guy connected. He met me at the front, you know, to give me my credentials. And there was some kind of a problem with getting my pass, you know, so I could get into the show. So he just reached in his bag and he says, "Well, here, man, just wear this to get inside." And it was Les Paul's pass. You know, it had his name on it. Les Paul Gibson Guitars. I was like, "Yeah, man, I'll wear that." So that's I have a photograph of that somewhere. That's as close as I came to meeting him. But, you know, man, just a legend in every way. That would have been a special one.
All right, final thing here for you, Damon, then we'll cut you loose. The last rock star you ran into in Nashville, who would that have been?
The last rock star I ran into in Nashville was Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick.
Really?
I was at the airport, and I was buying some chewing gum before I got on the plane. And I was standing there, you know, paying for it. And somebody walks by and goes, "Oh, hey, Damon." And I turned around, it was Tom Peterson. And I've seen Tom in different settings, you know, but it just caught me off guard to see him, you know, in the magazine shop at the airport. So, you know, and it's wild, man, because everybody lives here. Everybody, like Brad Whitford's here. Somebody was telling me, like, the Motley Crue guys live here now. You know, Peter Frampton lives in Nashville. It's, you know, the list goes on and on. So
yeah, Dave Mustaine and Derek St. Holmes. And, man, yeah, I've talked to so many guys that live there. But that's cool.
Well,
that's where I ran into Chris Fain at the airport. It was one of those things where I wasn't expecting to see him like in October or something. And he was going to do a Halloween thing with Slipknot at the time. So,
well, man, Nashville's just such a great town because all of us, you know, we're lifers as far as creating music, writing music, recording music, and there's just no better place to do that and have a normal life as well than to be here in Nashville in this community. You know, man, we were just so happy here. And I think that's another thing that fed into my decision meltdown to kind of shift into doing my own thing, because I want to be here more than I've been able to for the last 7 years since we moved here.
Now, are you writing and recording with anybody else, or are you just doing your own thing right now?
Right now, I've been focused on writing a batch of songs for my next record, but I have been working some with my old friend Kelly Gray. We're talking about doing a re-release, a remastered version of that Slave to the System record
okay.
that we did back in the early 2000s, which a lot of fans really love and are excited about. So, and I just got to imagine he and I are going to write some new songs, you know, in that process, because it's too easy for us to write songs together, man. That guy's such a genius musician and producer and engineer. So, yeah, man, I mean, you just never know on a week-to-week basis what kind of text message you're going to get or an email. Hey, man, are you in town? And my buddy Buck Johnson is playing keyboards for Aerosmith now. He's got a great new record he's putting together, and I was so happy he asked me to come and play guitar. So we did about 5 or 6 songs in the studio before he went to Vegas to do this residency that they're doing. So a lot of work to do in this town, man. And most of it is all with longtime friends, you know. So what a great life. What a great way to conduct business, you know, playing music and doing it with people that you know and respect.
I was thinking about that you've had the chance to play with many of your heroes.
I really have, man. You know, for a kid that grew up on a chicken farm in northeast Alabama, I mean, as rural of an area as you can come from, it just was never fathomable
right.
to me that something like that could happen. I just thought it would be amazing if I could make a living playing music. I never thought, like, oh, man, I want to sell 1 million records, or I want to be in a magazine. It never was about that. It was just, wow, what if I could, you know, raise a family and live my life and do it playing music? And that's exactly what's happened, brother. So I'm super grateful. And,
well,
I just want to keep working hard and continue to do that.
It couldn't have happened to a better dude, man. Memoirs of an Uprising is the latest record, and looking forward to seeing you here in the Motor City eventually somewhere down the road. But Damon, thanks so much for the time, man. We could go on and on for another couple hours, but I know you got stuff to do. I gotta hop on the air. Of course, you probably got hockey practice or something to take your son to or something like that, right?
Hockey game tonight, brother.
Hey, there you go. Good luck.
Hockey game tonight. They're kicking off the summer league practice this week, Meltdown. How about that?
That's awesome. Yeah, I know how much you enjoy it, you know, like I do, watching our kids play hockey. It's one of my favorite things, so.
Nothing better. There's nothing better, bro. Hey, thank you for the time, and we're going to get up to Detroit Rock City very, very soon. Watch and see.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Damon Johnson today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And man, I forgot. I've known that guy for like 20 years or something. I mean,
it's been that long?
I talk to him all the time. But yeah. I mean, you know, since the Brother Kane days. So it's been, mid-90s, something like that. So there you have it, Damon. Good guy. Great solo album out. Go get it if you get a chance. Memoirs of an Uprising. And I was just talking with Ale off the air here that we were supposed to have a legendary bass player on the show next time. But apparently they've had to push that back. So every time I bring it up, something always falls through. I don't know why.
Gotta stop promoting the stuff that we're doing. I know it.
I know it. As a matter of fact, just a little hint, Damon did mention his name in the interview, so we'll just leave it at that. So anyways, Al Beck is off to my left, your right on the radio, and he's got your news you can use or not, and you're going to start it all off with some AC/DC. Now, this has been going on for quite a while. You know, I don't know why they do this. I'm not sure what the secrecy thing is all about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is he in the band? Is he not in the band? Talking about Brian Johnson. It's like, why did I just announce he's back in the band, go and record and do some stuff? I don't understand what the deal is. Do these guys feel more added pressure when all of a sudden, you know, Brian Johnson's back in the band, or if things don't work out, they can just say, well, he's never in the band?
I don't understand it either, because the question is Brian Johnson, in fact, back in AC/DC? I mean, when he had to take himself off the road, it was always sort of understood that he might do studio stuff with them again. It was just he couldn't do the live shows because of his damaged hearing, right?
Right, right.
And last time we did a podcast together, we talked about the fact that their longtime producer confirmed that AC/DC is in the studio working on something.
Now, was that their longtime producer or like one of the guitar techs or something?
I think it was a producer, okay. I believe, yeah. Right. And he produced a bunch of their more recent albums, but he did say confirm that AC/DC was in the studio. He didn't even necessarily confirm it was an album. Mm-hmm. They're doing something.
Right.
And he said that he thinks Brian Johnson will be involved. And now the rumors are that Brian Johnson will not only be on a new AC/DC album, but also there's going to be a tour that he will be singing on.
You know,
again, all rumors. Right, none of this is confirmed, aside from the fact that AC/DC has been in the studio doing something.
Right. And that could be anything. But, anything. You know, it's one of those things where it's like a small part inside of me wanted to hear an AC/DC Axl album just because.
Yeah.
It just kind of would have been, I don't know, kind of cool. Like I said before, you know, when I saw AC/DC with Axl, I thought that Axl, you know, he's a superstar amongst his own self.
Yeah.
And he kind of like stayed off in the background just to kind of show respect for the other guys in the band. But, well, we'll see what happens as this unfolds, because gets a little nauseating sometimes, trying to figure out what's going on in these guys' worlds. Yeah, maybe it's none of our business.
Yeah. Then it would obviously be a record without Malcolm now. So,
yeah,
you know, unfortunately.
There you go. So another classic band on Led Zeppelin has something going on as well, huh?
Well, so they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. They've been doing a number of things. Like, they put it out there to fans. You know, hey, we're doing a whole 50th anniversary playlist. We want your input. Well, now there's a video series they're doing online, The History of Led Zeppelin, which they did just release episode one, which is really sort of focusing on the making of Led Zeppelin 1. And it turns out they did that album in about 30 hours, and it only cost them about 1,782 pounds.
That's what they did back in the day. I don't know. How much does that equal out to, I wonder?
It does, you know, for, if we were to adjust for inflation. But it was about $2,300 American for that, for 30 hours.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. It's like, it's one of those things, you know, do we need more history on Led Zeppelin? Maybe we do. You know, one of the only books I ever read as a kid.
I don't know why that was so funny to me.
The only book I ever read as a kid and did a book report on was Hammer of the Gods, a story about Led Zeppelin. So,
no kidding. Yeah. You did a book report on that, too.
That's right.
How was the grade, by the way?
I think I handed it in late, because that's what I always did. And I got a 70 on it, and the teacher said if I would have handed it on time, I would have got like an A or something. I don't know.
By the way, just out of curiosity, I adjusted for inflation. It's about $8,500 in today's money.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you do that on your phone?
I have an interest in inflation.
Man, nice.
I like a lot of old movies and stuff, so I've actually got an app on my phone that does inflation. Yeah.
Another useless fun fact.
Yeah, less than $10,000 to produce Led Zeppelin 1.
That's how those records were. And I mean, they just, you know, they didn't record them in all over the planet for, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Even today, I was just talking with somebody, Chips Enough, where he's like, bands, you know, back in the 80s and stuff, they'd give you $1 million in 6 months. Now it's like, you know what? Here's your $10,000 and here's your 2 weeks in the studio. That's it. You know, get it done. So,
yeah.
The guys from Led Zeppelin, I mean, some of those records, man, I just put the vinyl on. It's just so good. You know, I'm not a huge Led Zeppelin fan. You know what I'm saying?
But I respect the hell out of them. Like,
for
they're a band that I don't necessarily have that connection where I'm like, Led Zeppelin, the best.
Right.
But I hear it and I understand how people have that reaction to it.
The only thing I remember about that book, Hammer of the Gods, was a story about a fish and a naked groupie. So I'm not sure.
I have to go get my library card and find out about that groupie.
I'm sure you can just Google nowadays. All right, moving on. We got the guys from Rush, another classic band. All classics today.
Yeah, selfishly, I'd like to take this opportunity to cross-promote the other B-Pod Studios podcast. I'm on Nerd Radio with James and Chuck.
All right.
Chuck Bean, because this is a graphic novel from Rush. They've announced this graphic novel called The Making of Farewell to Kings. It's actually kind of based on the making of their album 1977. So, graphic novel, comic books, Rush, and it's coming out here September the 10th.
That's another band I just kind of fallen in love with all over again when you listen to everything. You know, it was just the anniversary of 2112, so I plopped that one on one night. And that record's so good. It's like, it's just so well put together. You know, everything just kind of fits with it. So that's that's cool, man. But, you know, it's one of those, it's another one of those instances where these bands are making money and doing stuff outside of making records, touring.
Yeah.
A la Motley Crue, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so these bands, they continue to do stuff.
Yeah, and I saw something else. Alex Lifeson, obviously, Rush is wrapping up too, and Alex Lifeson, just, he seemed that he was ready, you know? He's like, yeah, I'm done being in a band and touring. He's just ready to retire.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
He's paid his time.
But yeah, check out Nerd Radio, Beepod Studios.
There you go. Cheap plug.
Cheap plug for my other podcast.
Well, and finally, my very good friend, Tom Morello. Mm-hmm,
yep.
I spent an hour and a half on stage with one night. Now he's my friend.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
no, he's
doing all the shoveling BS. Here,
yeah, that's right. Great guy. But anyways, he's got a couple things he's been in the news for.
Yeah.
And the first thing is this Black Hole. And of course, everybody wants it named after Chris Cornell because he's got that song Black Hole, son.
Yeah. It's all in the inflection.
It's a black hole, son.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so there is a petition going around to get this the first photographed black hole named after Chris Cornell and, of course, his former bandmate Tom Morello of Audio. You know, when they were together in Audioslave, found out about it. Said, I heard about that, and I think it would be really nice. And he said, you let me know where to send that petition. I would happily officially add my name to that. It just seems like he said that seems absolutely appropriate to name it after him.
Well, I think what happened was somebody was interviewing Tom and brought that up. And what is Tom Morello supposed to say? No.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true.
And so the news story right away comes out. It's like Tom Morello thinks that Chris Cornell should, you know, have that name on the black hole. So.
Yeah. Well, this headline says that he endorses it, which is pretty accurate. But
like
I
said, he's not going to say no.
No, of course not. But the petition is up at on a website, change.org, to petition NASA to maybe put Chris Cornell's name on that.
And then you got some guitars with Tom Huss.
Some big news, obviously, out there in pop culture is Game of Thrones doing the final season right now, and there are some guitarist super fans, including Tom Morello, also Scott Ian and Nuno Betancourt have special Fender Game of Thrones custom guitars.
Have you seen, are you a Game of Thrones guy?
I have seen a couple seasons of it, and I got... It was too confusing to follow week to week, so I actually put it on the back burner and said, you know what? When it's done, I'll try it again.
Okay, because isn't this the last season or something?
It is the last season, yeah.
All right. Now, I'll have to start from scratch because I've never seen in one episode yet.
I watched the whole first season. When it first came out, my brother told me about it, and I watched it sort of like Netflix binge style, episode to episode to episode. And I liked it. I really loved it. And then there's just so many characters and so much going on. They got crazy names that it was impossible for me to follow.
Well, those guitars look killer.
They do.
They look really cool. Even if I have no idea what they're supposed to be about.
No, me neither. I also found out there's a Game of Thrones scotch that I'd like to try.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge scotch guy.
Oh, I love my scotch.
Yeah, scotchy, scotchy, scotchy.
That's right.
Isn't that what's Ron Burgundy say?
Ron Burgundy, yeah.
So, yes. Well, we'll save the bourbon talk for some other. We should do a bourbon podcast. Now we're thinking.
Okay. Yeah. As long as we get to drink while we do it.
Exactly. We can taste them and stuff. So.
Yeah, perfect.
Awesome.
I'm in.
Well, give your socials here.
Albeck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. At Meltdown WRIF. Of course, you can leave a voicemail feedback message if you'd like, 248-586-2988. And at Talking Rock with One is on Twitter as well. So, yeah, thanks so much for listening. We got some great interviews scheduled and getting ready to roll here. Like I said, the one we were supposed to do tomorrow, which would be Good Friday as I record this, got nixed. But we'll get back on track and we'll get that person back on the podcast coming up soon enough. As always, thank you so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.